the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking today about an article that I wrote and posted this morning. It's getting a lot of attention, and perhaps because of the title of my article. It is entitled, On Second Thought, Why Mother's Day is a Bad Idea. Now, I did not publish this before Mother's Day. I decided strategically to publish it the day after Mother's Day so that we can kind of go back and think about what happened and wonder if it was really what we want to say about motherhood. If it was really the way we would properly honor mothers. You can find my article at albertmohler.com. The title is, On Second Thought, Why Mother's Day is a Bad Idea. When we get to the main section of our program today, I'm going to be tracing through the history of Mother's Day, what has happened to it, and why I find some really problematic angles to the whole issue of Mother's Day. Now, this show is slightly tongue-in-cheek because yesterday I was almost like everyone else celebrating Mother's Day. There is sentiment, sentimentality, sentimentalism, all woven into the day, and necessarily so. But my concern is that that's all it represents for many people. And as a cultural celebration, it's really not about motherhood. It's just about sentimentality. And when you look at motherhood from a Christian perspective, it's just a whole lot more than that. We're also going to be listening to something that is really, really unusual. It is a broadcast from ABC News. We're going to hear just a couple of excerpts in which a woman's talking about why she wants her husband to be the breadwinner in the home and what a mother really wants on Mother's Day. It's going to be very, very interesting. It's the kind of thing that probably didn't make most cultural conversations about Mother's Day, but it's going to be front and center on the Albert Mohler Program today. We'll get ready to get your calls at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It will be an interesting conversation coming up in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news. Just last week, we were talking about the development of these co-ed dorm rooms at Stanford University, the University of Chicago, and elsewhere. It made the attention of National Review magazine, where one particular mom, Karen Venable Morin, wrote of discovering that her daughter, a senior at Stanford University, was in a co-ed dorm room. Two girls, two boys, two young women, two young men in one room. That's it. Four walls, four beds, one room. Ms. Morin was absolutely incensed by this, and she discovered that Stanford University was doing this as a matter of policy, as is the University of Chicago. The University of Chicago actually sent out a letter to parents letting them know that their offspring may be in a co-ed dorm room come fall and that they would not be informed. That's just the price of entering the University of Chicago. If you want your child to go to the University of Chicago, then just maybe a co-ed room and just deal with it. Same thing at Stanford University. And according to the New York Times, over 50 other major American universities. Now, as is almost always the case, there's a follow-up to the story. And at the choice column of the New York Times, there is a follow-up by Jacques Steinberg on this issue. It turns out that Ms. Morin's daughter, whose name is Daisy, responded to the fracas concerning her co-ed dorm situation. She writes back, and she's upset that her mother wrote the article and that National Review magazine published it and the New York Times gave it attention because she is 22 years old, a film studies major at Stanford, and she's just fine with the co-ed dorm situation. She's just absolutely fine. This is what she said. She says, the conflict has very little to do with Stanford and gender-neutral housing. It has everything to do with my parents having a hard time adjusting to the fact that I'm out of the house, I'm the oldest, I'm 3,000 miles away, and especially that I'm a liberal agnostic while they are conservative Catholics, end quote. So there you got a real generational divide going on there that's a worldview divide. Here you have a young woman who is declaring herself at age 22 to be a liberal agnostic when her parents are conservative Catholics. Daisy Morin writes, I was happy with my rooming situation. It made no sense to inconvenience a lot of busy people over something that wasn't actually a problem for me, that is living in a co-ed room. Now, Jacques Steinberg called Daisy Morin to confirm the details. He asked if her mother had made good on her promise to refuse to pay for the tuition and housing for the daughter's spring term at Stanford. She said she was doing so as a sign of her moral outrage for making this kind of housing arrangement. And Daisy Morin said her mother had indeed cut off the spring tuition payments. She's taken out a loan to be able to continue and conclude her education. You know, all this is just a reminder of the fact that when you look at something like this, the bottom line isn't changed one bit. There isn't any change in this whatsoever. The fact that the daughter is happy with this just makes the situation worse, not better. Because, after all, the people who've been paying the bills are the parents. And the values that are being subverted here are the values of the parents. The moral concerns of the parents are being written off by the university. The university basically told these parents, go take a walk. And this is where Karen Venerable Moore, in writing on this, is exactly right when she says, you know, what Stanford University is saying more or less is there are plenty of parents that will be willing to pay the bills for the prestige of a Stanford degree for their child. If you don't like it, just take a hike. And that's at least what they did with their money. And this just adds to the tragedy of this story. But it goes back to the point, parent beware. As you're thinking about educational issues for the fall, educational choices, you better be looking carefully at aspects of college life you may never have had on your screen before, including the housing situation. There is a lot out there going on in the news, and some of it can escape a lot of attention, and it can point to things that are fundamentally important. Stephen Freiss, writing at the New York Times, has published an article entitled, Hurt by Economy, Plastic Surgeons Find Hope in New Products, end quote. This is a recurring issue on this program because one of our concerns in thinking as Christians about beauty is to recognize that this society is bought into a corrupted and artificial understanding of beauty. The plastic surgery kind of impulse that goes on in our world with some women having as many as 6, 7, 8 procedures is just testimony to the fact that we have idolized a false understanding of beauty, and the artificiality of it is even indicated by the fact that we still call these surgeons plastic surgeons. Stephen Freiss is talking about what is going on with the nation's cosmetic surgeons. They are powerless over a sagging economy, but they're also looking to new opportunities for profit, new treatments on the horizon, including stem cell injections and a cream that can remove unwanted facial lines. Dr. Brian Kinney, a Los Angeles surgeon, said business has definitely been flat. I can think of a particular woman who said in October she wanted a facelift, but she said, well, I need to sell a house because I want to make sure I'm secure. Then she told me in March she was still waiting. The real estate market's down, end quote. You're not talking here about surgery that's needed for her health. You're not talking about a heart transplant. You're not talking about an appendectomy. You're not talking about something that is a matter of health-related surgery. You're talking about something that is purely aesthetic. She wants a facelift. She has to sell her house first, down market. The house is hard to sell. According to Steve Freiss, writing at the New York Times, the number of cosmetic procedures in the United States last year fell 12.3% from 2007, yet that's falling to just over 10.2 million. 10.2 million. Now, there are roughly just a bit fewer than 300 million persons in America, and this is 10 million procedures. This is one-third of 1% of all Americans having some kind of cosmetic procedure in terms of surgery. The biggest growth area, by the way, has been in non-surgical procedures, owing largely to the success of Botox, a botulinum toxin that works by numbing and relaxing facial muscles that create wrinkles. Now get this, the company that markets Botox, Allergan Incorporated, is bracing for new competition now that the Food and Drug Administration has approved the second botulinum toxin for similar use, Dysport, produced by the French drug maker Ipsen Biopharm Limited. Quote, everyone is excited about it because it's the first competitor to Botox in 7 years, said Dr. Z. Paul Lorenk, who practices in Manhattan and who views Dysport as a faster-acting, longer-lasting, and potentially less expensive option. Quote, it's also a softer look, end quote. Well, there you have it again. This is an opportunity for profit. Very, very interesting. By the way, one little angle into a part of life you might not otherwise see. There was a medical conference there in the New York area. 2,500 practitioners and exhibitors attending live demonstrations, listening to debates over newer techniques, and browsing countless models of implants and needles that were on display, reports Steve Freiss. You're going to love this. Still, the convention offered provocative sessions like, quote, 137 rhinoplasties in 20 patients. What went wrong? Oh, there has to be a whole lot wrong with that. 20 patients and 137 nose surgeries? Evidently, folks didn't like what they got after they got what they asked for. By the way, another one of these things, the seminar that you missed at this convention, quote, The Weird Smile After Facelift Surgery, A Dynamic Investigation, and here's another seminar, The Role of Chin Augmentation in Achieving Facial Harmony. We're going to come back to talk about Mother's Day and what it means a day later to look back at our cultural celebration. We're going to track the history just a little bit. We're going to look at the present reality. And then we're going to hear from some women who are really going to say what they wish had happened on Mother's Day. It's going to be very interesting. Today on the Albert Mueller Program, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, I'm with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I was either smart enough or brave enough or cowardly enough to publish this article the day after Mother's Day. But my article published today at albertmueller.com is entitled, On Second Thought, Why Mother's Day is a Bad Idea. Now, one of the things I want to accomplish in this article is what I talked about a bit last Friday, which is the fact that the biblical conception of motherhood really isn't about sentimentality, with the sentimentalism just being about emotions and emoting about mom. When you look at the mothers of the Bible, they're a pretty stalwart sort. You've got Jochebed, who put her baby in a floating ark of bulrushes. That's Moses, of course, defying the order of Pharaoh that all Hebrew male children be put to death. Rachel, mother to Joseph and Benjamin, died giving birth to Benjamin in an act of motherly bravery. Hannah promised her son to God, presented Samuel as a young boy for service in the house of the Lord. Mary, the mother of Jesus, risked shame and disgrace to bear the Savior and to provide all Christians with a model of brave and unflinching obedience. She was there when Christ was crucified. This fulfilled what Simeon, the elderly man there at the temple, had said just after Jesus was born when he told Mary, Behold, this child is appointed for the fall and rising of many in Israel, and for a sign that is opposed, and a sword will pierce through your own soul also, so that thoughts from many hearts may be revealed. End quote, that being Luke 2:34-35. You know, you've got stories of bravery. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, it says, Women received their dead back, their men back from the dead. It's stalwart, brave, courageous women who were valorized in the Scripture. And it's those who keep covenant. Those who are honored in Scripture are those who raise their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, there is necessary sentimentality to thinking about mom. After all, this is rooted in a relationship that is literally beyond words in terms of our appreciation and love for maternal affection, for loyalty, for faithfulness, for discipline, for teaching, for nurture, for protection, all the things that moms do. But it's got to be more than sentimentalism. That's the problem. The American celebration of Mother's Day goes back to at least 1858. Anna Reeves Jarvis organized the precursor to Mother's Day as a way to protest a lack of sanitation in rural Appalachia. Later, she, along with figures such as Julia Ward Howe, you may remember, wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. They wanted a mother's celebration or a mother's day in order to protest war. Julia Ward Howe said this, quote, Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we've been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience, end quote. So it was a political protest with the first Mother's Days. And by the way, there was a particular understanding of maternal virtue here. It was believed that women were morally superior to men precisely because they had the experience of motherhood. However, very quickly, as Mother's Day became a recognized celebration, it also became commercialized. Back in the early 1900s, the Florist Review put it this way, quote, This was a holiday that could be exploited. In 1914, Congress responded, made the second Sunday in May to be Mother's Day. Woodrow Wilson signed the legislation. The focus was not to be on honoring all American mothers in common, but each family's mother in each home. That's why it's Mother's Day, apostrophe S, singular, rather than Mother's Day in the plural. But before long, the holiday became utterly commercialized. It is now the second largest gift-giving holiday of the year, according to some commercial reports. It is the number one day for eating out in America. And needless to say, it is a boon to the greeting card industry. There is commercialism here, no doubt. But that's not the only thing to say here. And after all, just about every holiday gets commercialized. there is sentimentality here. And again, the sentimentality is just this effusive bathos of emotion that substitutes for a genuine way of honoring mothers. Now, I'm not saying don't give mom a card. I'm not saying don't take your mother out to eat. I'm not saying don't honor her and present her with gifts. I'm just saying that that's no buy-off for a life of repudiating the very values your mother represents. That is no way to compensate for a life that is marked by ingratitude rather than gratitude. One of the interesting things is to ask, what would mothers want on Mother's Day? And, I think that the whole idea of Mother's Day is a bad idea because it subverts the reality of faithful mothering. It robs faithful mothers of their true glory. Mothers are handed cards when instead God should be praised for giving us the gift of mothers, and mothers should be honored for doing the kinds of things which are not politically correct, but do lead to healthy, well-rounded children, especially those who are raised in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So as I write in my article published this morning, Mother's Day is a bad idea. And yet, I'm not calling for its repeal. And I was there with you and all the rest, honoring mom, in this case most specifically, my wife, the mother of my children. And we took Mary out to eat, and also her mother, Mary, my mother-in-law, who was here, wanted to honor her as well. I called my mom, who's about 1,000 miles away, and we did our very best to cover all the bases. And there is sentiment. There's a proper sentimentality that is reflected in the fact that there is emotion that is rooted in a substantial relationship of faithfulness. But there's got to be more than mere sentiment. And the thing that is really wrong about Mother's Day is that you have a lot of people who don't know that they honor their mothers in any way with their lives, who just this one day try to make it all up in some politically correct way, culturally recognized way. And then, to be honest, there's some mothers that don't deserve to be honored. Just giving birth is not what was meant to be honored in Mother's Day. It's a bit of a confusion. But, again, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying there's got to be more to it. Speaking more to it, the big issue is what would a lot of moms really like to have received on Mother's Day? Here is a real twist. Megan Basham writing at the Wall Street Journal, a column, What Mom Wants, says that what mom wants is, for one thing, for her husband to work. It turns out that what a lot of moms want is not what this society suggests they should want. One of the reports coming out of the current economic downturn is that about 80% of the jobs lost are male jobs, jobs held by men. They are the lunchbox jobs. The manufacturing jobs, the kinds of jobs that are first to go, construction jobs, in a time of construction downturn. The jobs where women predominate, they're doing pretty well. As a matter of fact, there are reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics indicating that there may be a big shift. You've got folks such as Elizabeth Eves writing at Forbes magazine saying, thanks to the recession, we may be at just such another sociosexual inflection point. In other words, things may be changing. There are some who actually believe that on the other side of this, there'll be more women in the workplace than men. Now, I want you to hear something. Here is one woman suggesting to ABC News what she wishes that she had. Let's listen to clip one. This is Eleanor Himmert speaking to Ann Plachette Murphy on ABC's Good Morning America.
I mean, that's one of the basic things that most little girls grow up thinking, that the man is going to put a roof over her head. He's going to support the family.
Well, it turns out that this is a family that has been, affected by this economic downturn. In this case, the husband, Rick Himmert, has lost his job, and he's decided to become a house husband. There is an exchange of roles. Now, it is Eleanor who's in the workplace. And, a lot of folks, feminists in particular, would say that's just exactly the feminist dream. Turns out that's not Eleanor Himmert's dream. And the ABC report is very, very interesting, as we'll hear when we come back from this break. You're going to be fascinated to hear both what this woman and this man, this wife, and this husband have to say in this situation. It raises the question, what do moms really want on Mother's Day? And my guess is the cards are nice, especially when they are thrust at moms and mom's hands by grubby little hands that wrote those grubby little cards themselves as expressions from the heart. But the real issue is, what do moms properly want on Mother's Day? Looking backward today, you're going to be fascinated when you hear this woman interviewed on ABC News. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Love to know what you're thinking. Write us at mail@albertmuller.com. Follow us at Twitter, Mueller Radio, or Albert Mueller. Facebook, The Albert Mueller Program. Again, give me a call, 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. ABC News reporting on March 16, 2009, that the recession that began in December 2007 has led to more than 80% of the pink slips being handed out to men. I wonder how many people right now understand that. When we're talking about this economic downturn, you're talking about a situation in which, in the workforce, the effect has been very disproportionate. 8 out of 10 persons laid off in this recession have been men. Ann Plachette Murphy and Laura Lacey at ABC News report this. The sudden role reversal can upset the balance within a family. And they're talking about men who are now home being kind of house husbands or house dads while moms are bringing home the bacon. This can upset the balance within a family, causing stress and tension. The couple they go to are Rick Hemmert and his wife Elizabeth. It says here that Rick, a salesman, used to spend his days calling on clients, not doing laundry, but since he was laid off in November, he has found his time consumed by housework and the care of his 7-year-old daughter, Elizabeth, to keep the family afloat. The mom, Eleanor, Eleanor is the mom, Elizabeth's the daughter. Eleanor has increased her hours significantly, often getting up at 4 a.m. and coming home long after Elizabeth is in bed. She said she never imagined that Rick would be the full-time caregiver. And by the way, she never imagined it. She doesn't like it. But evidently, Rick is settling into this. And this is where you just need to hear it in her own voice, or I should say in their own voices. Eleanor says basically what she wants for Mother's Day, to put this into context, is that that her husband would go get a job of any kind. Let's listen to clip number two.
I wish Rick would gain back my respect by either getting a job of any kind and treat me like a woman.
Rick, how would you complete that sentence?
Respect me for what I am and appreciate me for what I do. Because when you're out of work and you're home every day, you need somebody to boost you. And I need her to give me kind words and not degrading words.
Well, it's just a very, very interesting, sad, I must say, very, very interesting feature of a family's life here on network television, but it just gets more interesting because right now you've got, for instance, you have some feminists claiming that this new situation that could lead to a reality of a majority of American workers being women. Well, one Salon.com writer celebrated the possibility that the long-awaited redistribution of domestic labor might prove crucial in finally evening the professional playing field, end quote. Another wondered whether the financial crisis will turn out to be, quote, accidentally feminist. So there are folks who think this is just great, but I just have to wonder how many of these women actually think it's great. By the way, Megan Basham, writing at the Wall Street Journal, points out that a 2006 University of Virginia study that found, contrary to many feminist claims and preoccupations with equal division of household tasks, found that dishwashing men do not happy women make. Along with a spouse who offers affection, attention, and empathy, what really makes women happy is one that earns at least 2/3 of the family income. Brad Wilcox and Stephen Nock of the University of Virginia were surprised that even self-described feminist women are happiest when their husbands do most of the breadwinning. Another study looked at 10,000 subjects in 37 countries and found that in all 37 cultures, women valued husbands with good financial prospects. In other words, the feminist dream just isn't exactly what some people think it is. Listen to this. Here is what Eleanor has to say when she's told that she should admire the fact that her husband is now kind of a house husband. This is clip number three.
I don't like coming home and seeing him in my apron.
How has it changed your feelings about Rick?
I wish I could say something different, but I've lost so much respect for him.
Okay, well, let's just listen to Rick speak for himself in this final clip.
I just don't want her focus to be, I base your manhood on how many figures you bring home. Because I think when you get down to the root, the man is a person that can handle children, set up play dates.
Well, there you got it. If you're looking at what some people think is the dream of the new reality, there you've got it in this couple with Rick and Eleanor. She's now in the workplace, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, coming home after the daughter's in bed, just to put food on the table. Her husband is home and is literally at times wearing her apron, and he's handling the children and setting up play dates. Now, the question is this what women really want? And so you've got the intersection of so many issues here, but on Mother's Day, it just seems that these issues come together in a classic sense. When you ask what mothers really want for Mother's Day, my guess is a lot of them would just like the kinds of support and even traditional roles that they had dreamed of. It was Eleanor who said, that's one of the basic things that most girls, little girls, grow up thinking, that the man's going to put a roof over her head. He's going to support the family, I think for good reason. And we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is a fascinating turn in the whole question of the distribution of household labor, of the roles of men and women. You know, one of the questions that we really face as a modern society is there any kind of setup for society, of understanding of gender roles that isn't based just in what you might call equal opportunity employment. In other words, do people actually want something other than what the society has been talking about incessantly for the last 30 or 40 years? By the way, the White House currently has an Office of Minority and Women Inclusion. So also does the TARP, that's the Troubled Asset Relief Program. So you've got all kinds of things going on in politics. There's no similar office for men and boys. However, we're looking right now at the fact that 80% of the layoffs, I mean, when you think about TARP especially, this toxic or troubled asset relief program, having an Office of Minority and Women Inclusion, well, it turns out that the women are the least affected. You know, 8 out of 10 persons laid off are men. But it's not politically correct to go and do that. By the way, the Pew Research Center's most recent survey found that only 21% of mothers with children under the age of 18 say that their ideal is full-time employment. So track that again. Only 21%, that's only 2 out of 10 of mothers with children under 18. This isn't even children under, say, 4 or 8, but 18. Only 21% say full-time employment is their ideal. In contrast, you've got most of them wanting to spend either fewer hours at work or to be at home. And by the way, men, looking at it from the other side, 72% of fathers say a full-time job is the best option for them, 72%, and for good reason. Again, the 2006 University of Virginia study found that what makes women happy is a husband that earns at least two-thirds of the family income. Very interesting calculation they came up with there. So there are an awful lot of women who want to make a contribution, even financially, but they don't want to make the main contribution. They don't want to be the so-called breadwinner. And when this is an exchange of roles, as happened between Rick and Eleanor Himmert, well, she really doesn't want to come home with him wearing the apron. And in this case, here's a mom who feels like she's missing out on raising her daughter. Now, there are a couple of footnotes to this. Of course, in terms of temporary dislocation, in terms of the recession and losing a job, this kind of thing can be temporary. But if you heard what Elizabeth, or Eleanor, excuse me, was saying in this, is that she wants Rick to go out and get a job, just any job. And this is tied to her respect for him. I want to know, is that true for you? I mean, does that ring true, women? Would you have a lack of respect for a husband who wanted to stay at home while you worked? The phone number, 877-893-8255. We've got just a bit of time left in the program today, but there's time for you to call, 877-893-TALK. You know, looking, by the way, at Mother's Day, we were talking about earlier in the program, I wonder how many people know that those who pushed for the original Mother's Day regretted they'd ever had the idea. In this case, Anna Jarvis, who died, I believe, in 1905, even by then, she was already sad that that Mother's Day become what it was. And by the way, you have a mother-daughter pair going on here. But I want to go back to the fact that Christians have a different understanding of motherhood than the culture. And whereas the culture looks at motherhood and says, here's an institution, we'll sentimentalize, even as we in many ways marginalize the actual role of moms, Christians are the people who better come back and say, look, mothering's tough business. It really is. First of all, let's get this right. Mothering begins with a mother who's determined to give birth to her child. There's an absolute honoring of childbirth and childbearing and child rearing. Needless to say, abortion's just not an option. And then, of course, there's the brave work of raising children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, disciplining children, teaching children, protecting children, making decisions on behalf of children, reordering life. I mean, that's one of the main contributions that parents make in general, and moms make most specifically, is to reorder their lives. And that's really where it gets to the intersection of the story with Rick and Eleanor Himmert. Eleanor Himmert wants to be home with Elizabeth. She wants to reorder her life so that that child is the priority of her life. And right now she feels robbed because that is not the case. And from a Christian perspective, we should valorize a mom who wants to be there with the child, who wants to reorder her life in many ways to forfeit her own opportunities and to sublimate her own perhaps a vision for what she might do professionally, what she might do in the larger culture, for what she and she alone can do in the life of that child. Or of children. Now, that's something I want to valorize. That's something I want to honor on Mother's Day. That's not the kind of thing you're going to hear. You're not going to find a greeting card down at the local drugstore in the Mother's Day section that talks about that. You're not going to find the thank you for protecting me from the evil influences of the world card. You're not going to find the thank you for giving up your priorities in life in order to raise me and my brothers and sisters, if indeed that fits your situation. You're not going to find the card that says, thank you for disciplining me and not allowing me to be my own self-authenticating, self-directed little individual that grew up to be what almost anyone would call now a psychopath or a sociopath. Thank you for giving me strong moral guidance. You're not going to find too many cards, I dare say, down at the local drugstore. They're going to say, thank you for teaching me the Bible. Thank you for holding me in the lap and reading me Bible stories, and thank you for teaching me God's truth. You're just not going to see that. You're not going to see, thank you for loving Dad. Thank you for bringing out the best in him. Thank you for being loyal and faithful to him as he was loyal and faithful to you. You're just not going to see that. Instead, what you get is the kind of bathos, that's the word for it, the kind of utter wallowing in sentimentality. And, you know, the worst part of it is greeting cards don't talk the way we talk, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons men have a hard time with greeting cards, is that that's not the kind of language that men naturally use. So what do men do? They buy words. They buy a message. And so there are an awful lot of husbands and sons out there buying words in order to communicate something on Mother's Day. I'm not saying they don't believe them. I'm not saying that please hear me. I'm not saying that those words were lies. I'm simply saying that that's not the way most men talk. So guys, let me tell you what you could have done on Mother's Day. You could have put it in your own words. You could have figured out what you really want to honor and honored that in mom. There's so many different angles to this. We could have looked at the generational divide in Mother's Day and motherhood as a concept. We could have looked at so many different angles, but I'll tell you, this one really got to me. This one that is raised by what women actually want. Hearing it in the voice of just one woman, in this case Eleanor Himmert, in the midst of this particular economic downturn is, I think, a fascinating word that ought to lead us to a lot of careful thought. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You got to love this. Every once in a while you see a story that you just know fits somewhere in a conversation about Mother's Day, maybe about modesty. Turns out that in Saudi Arabia, they don't have a Miss Saudi Arabia contest. There's no surprise, no swimsuit competition there in Saudi Arabia. Instead, they have a contest known as Miss Beautiful Morals. In this case, the beauty queens cover their face and body in black robes and an Islamic veil. No one can see what they look like. But in Saudi Arabia's only beauty pageant, the judges don't care about perfect figure or face. What they're looking for in the quest for Miss Beautiful Morals is the contestant who shows the most devotion and respect for her parents. Pageant founder Qadra al-Mubarak says, quote, the idea of the pageant is to measure the contestants' commitment to Islamic morals. It's an alternative to the calls for decadence in the other beauty contests that only take into account a woman's body and looks. The winner won't necessarily be pretty, she says. We care about the beauty of the soul and the morals. Nearly 200 contestants will spend 10 weeks attending classes. They're going to be quizzed on themes, including Discover Your Inner Strength, The Making of Leaders, and Mom. Here's the one conference. Mom, paradise is at your feet. Now, also, the hopefuls will spend a day at a country house with their moms, where they'll be observed by judges and graded on how they interact with their mothers. Since the pageant is not televised and no men are involved, during that part, the contestants can take off their veils and can appear to other women. Really, really interesting, by the way. The Boston Globe says this is just the latest example of conservative Muslims co-opting Western-style formals or formats to spread their message in the face of an onslaught of foreign influences. Now, just in case you needed this clarification, there are very few beauty pageants in the largely conservative Arab world. The most dazzling is in Lebanon, the region's most liberal country, where contestants appear on TV in one-piece swimsuits and glamorous evening gowns and answer questions that test their confidence and general knowledge. You know, I got to tell you, you can't read this without a smile. And yet, from a Christian perspective about beauty, we got to understand that there's an insight here that so many in the West who call themselves Christians miss. They're calling this beauty contestant winner, the person to be crowned in this contest, the Miss Beautiful Morals. Well, read Proverbs 31. What are you going to find there? You're going to find, after all, a woman who is honored for what's inside, not for what appears on the outside. Perhaps a little witness here from Saudi Arabia is a bracing challenge to the, well, to use their word for it, the decadence in the West. I'm not proud of our beauty contests. Are you? Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.